Open to chapter 2. We're going to begin Solomon's grand test, trying to find purpose and meaning in life. Of course, the big question that he's asking is, what is profitable in this life under the earth? He's already started in chapter 1 and verse 1 by, in his introduction, giving us a conclusion, which he'll arrive at later after he proves it. But he said, everything's vain. It's not of any value. It's emptiness. So he asked, what advantage does man have for his work that he performs under the sun? And that's the big underlying question that he's going to try to find an answer for. So when it's all said and done, and you look at your 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever amount of life or years you've been given of life on this earth, when you look back and say, was it worth it? Did I accomplish anything? You know, was there any value in it? And that's the question that he's asking. And so we're looking at this grand experiment or this grand test, if you would, because he says in chapter 2 and verse 1, therefore I'm going to test. And we're going to see several tests that he subjects himself to try to find something that's satisfying, something that will give him pleasure, that's meaningful, enduring. And so in this one chapter, we're going to look at him testing pleasure, and that includes riches and everything that it will bring with it, wisdom and folly. And then he's going to look at just accumulating stuff and materialism and the vanity in that. And of course, you know the answer in all of them. He's already given to us. The answer to all these tests is, nope, that didn't work. No, that didn't help. It's all vanity. And so again, the purpose of this is not to create an attitude of despair and depression, because he's going to tell you some secrets of how to enjoy life. But it's to get us to look above the sun. Or actually look at the sun, Jesus Christ, you know, because there's where true meaning in life is going to be. And a lot of people are, I don't want to characterize everyone the same, because you got different people coming from different places. But some people just never have thought to ask certain questions. Some people are so busy in other things in life, they don't ever look up and ask questions. Other people are just lazy. They don't want to think about these things. And some are, the laziness is not really laziness. It's a not a complacency. What am I looking for? A resistance. Because they don't want to look up because they're having so much fun now and they don't want to be accountable. They want to live for the day. But in the end, they're the ones going to be the fool because they realize, I've wasted my life. And so that's why it's so important that we look at this section. So here's the test that begins, and we're going to look hopefully at the whole chapter, and we'll look at the sections 1 through 11, then 12 through 17, then we'll look at the last paragraph. But this first section, you remember, what qualified Solomon to make this grand experiment? There's four things we picked out. He had the opportunity because he's king. He had the wealth, richest man in his day. He had the wisdom to evaluate. He didn't lose his mind. A lot of people, don't they go crazy? And they wake up, man, I just lost my mind. So he's going to be able to evaluate all this correctly. And the fourth one, he's got authority. I mean, he has the power to do anything he wants. So it's one thing to have the wealth. There's one thing to have the time. It's another thing to have the money and the authority to carry it out. He has all this. So he is uniquely qualified to test for all people, you know, what is the purpose in life. So he says in verse 1, so I will test myself with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it was futility. So in other words, whatever your eye beholds, whatever you want to do, just do it. Now, wouldn't that be make life joy and grand? Isn't that what you think? If I didn't have to go to work, if I didn't have to be a slave to the master, you know, I'm talking about the job, and you could just do whatever you wanted any day, all day long, whatever your heart desired, boy, life would be grand. And he says right up front, no, it's empty. It leaves you feeling null and void when it's all done.
Come on, Solomon. We said verse 2. I said of laughter, it's madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? And so the first thing he says, let's just have fun and just laugh, laugh, laugh. Now, is there some need for laughter in your life? Well, yeah, it's life's best medicine, they say. But are some people, all they do is just give themselves to silliness? That's all they do? It's just silliness, nonstop, and there's not a serious bone in their life. And so when it's all said and done, he says, it's madness, because what does it accomplish? This word in the King James says it's pleasure and mirth or laughter. And it's not just craziness, but it's the joy that comes with the religious festivals. It's used of that word there. So it's just lightheartedness and happiness, but can you live there all the time? Well, there's other things in life to it. And so he asks the question, if all you do is laugh and have fun, what do you accomplish when it's all said and done? All you did was laugh and exercise some muscles and your belly is sore, right? Okay. It's interesting. The preacher, Eaton says, is not so much testing pleasure, but he's really testing himself. Talking about Solomon. We can trace what happens when you stimulate your brain or the pleasure center and the addictive cycles that take place. But there's a release in the middle of your brain, all these hormones that, and you heard of dopamine and serotonin. These are the pleasure hormones. And it would be fun to spend the next half hour talking about how any type of stimulation, whether it's sexual or alcoholic, or just clicking on your iPad, it releases some dopamine in your brain and activates the pleasure center. And some of these chemicals are stronger than cocaine. And so they know if they can get you just to click, that creates an addictive cycle. And you just want to click, click, click because it makes you feel good. Now, I say all that because Solomon said, I'm just going to have fun. I'm just going to seduce myself with pleasure because it makes you feel good. And it does. It's proven. But when it's all said and done, the question is, what did I get done? What did I accomplish? I just laughed or I just felt good. He says it's futility, madness. So he goes on and said, well, I'll do it with wine. Now, don't ask the questions in these tests whether he was doing right or wrong. That's not the issue. The question is, will these things satisfy you? Whether they are right or wrong is not the issue that he's asking. And like some have suggested, he was on a midlife crisis here, but he's just going overboard anywhere he wants. And so he says with alcohol. Now, did he get stone drunk, just falling all over himself? What does it say in that text that would answer that? All right, so I drank enough, but my mind guided me wisely. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but we would think it like maybe a wine connoisseur, testing all different alcohols and different kind of wines and drinking this much and pairing it with that. He said, because there's pleasure in that. So he said, I tried to stimulate my body with wine, letting my mind guide me. And how to take hold of folly, because there's a folly in that drunkenness. Yes, he says that. Until I could see what good was for the sons of men to do under the heavens for the few years of their life. And of course, the answer is, well, that didn't satisfy. So I would suggest there's nothing new under the sun, even though he says wine. Were there drugs back in their days as well? And do people turn to these type of elements to try to fill the void, to disconnect or have some pleasure or have some fun in life? Always. That's why the big push is for the legalization of marijuana. It's just another stimulant drug to introduce in your life for some type of pleasure. Solomon's already been there. So let's put these two together. Laughter and alcohol. Often they go together, don't they? It's interesting. Robin Williams, one of the greatest comedian of our last generation here. And he is quoted as saying this, kid, if you need booze or drugs to enjoy your life to the fullest, then you're doing it wrong.
Isn't that interesting? Because this is the king of laughter in many ways, right? And he realizes that's not the answer. But even this man who just lived to tell a joke and to make people laugh, did he figure it out? And why do you say that? He hung himself. Now, I know there's some discussion that he was diagnosed, I guess, with early onset of Parkinson's disease, and there might have been some depression brought on because of this mental disease. And I don't have all the answers, but he hung himself, committed suicide. Did he have it figured out? No. Was it laughter? Was it that kind of pleasure? No, it wasn't. And we see that repeated over and over with celebrities and people of that sort. So Solomon says, well, maybe it's not in this personal drug use. Maybe it's out there building things. Now, there is a lot of fun in building, and he's going to address that later, that often the reward is just the fruit of your labor, just seeing what you've done. There's something in planting crops or building a house or just constructing anything. There's Richard's here, and he's taken cars that were banged up, and he bangs out the dents and gets them running again, and he's so proud. Look at this, you know, I got it for nothing because the guy's going to throw it away, and now it's worth, isn't there some pleasure in that, all right? But in the end, the question is it fulfilling long term? That's the question. Now, he'll address that, the immediate satisfaction, but he's looking at overall, is this how you make an impact on life? And so he goes, I enlarged my work. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself to irrigate a forest of growing trees. Now, it is said of Solomon, he was a great architect in his day and a great builder. The Solomon's Wall, part of it still exists in Jerusalem today. They said the temple which he built was one of the seven wonders of the world. His canal systems. Well, actually, it says in 1 Kings chapter 6, it took 7 years to build the temple. 7 years. But then in chapter 7, verse 1, it said it took 13 years to build his own palace. Almost twice as long to build his personal house compared to the house for the Lord. How grand do you think that house was? All the money, all the labor, all the time, just to build you a place to live. And his 700 wives and 300 concubines, which we'll get to in a second. When he says he built gardens and parks, and it used the word forest, is that overstating it, forest? Now, when you think of a forest, you think of a row of trees. No, you think of acres and acres of trees standing tall and thick together. And so when he uses the word forest, he planted and created forest. And he could look back, look what I've done with my hand. Now, I can't imagine just the feeling, the sense of accomplishment. But when it's done, he says, it was fun. The project was fun. When it's all said and done, I thought when I got there, I'd finally feel satisfied with life. Like I put my name on this earth and my stamp there. And now I feel like I can just sit back and relax because I've done something worthwhile. And what's his answer? No, it just doesn't cut it. So he turned somewhere else. Now, let's be honest. We haven't got to sex, and we haven't got to money, and we'll come back to that. But if you could have all the fun in your life with pleasure, there were no problems with any kind of drugs or anything, or you could just build in, haven't we told ourselves, boy, I could be happy in life if I could just do some of those things, and there were no consequences. If I could just build, you know, if I have the nicer house or whatever, I would finally be happy. And don't we tell ourselves that? If I just could. And that's what he's saying. I just did. And trust me, there's no long-term joy or fulfillment in any of it.
Now, that's hard for me sometimes to grasp, all right? Because I want to test it for myself, don't you? You want the fame, or you want the project, or you want the wealth. But God left this for us so we could just trust Solomon and say, okay, I'm going to listen to you and gain wisdom from your wisdom that it's not fulfilling. Yes, Clinton.
Well, there's nothing better for a man, though, to enjoy the fruits of labor of a man. That's short-lived. That's like a fix for the day.
That's right. So when we get into the next section later, he'll say, well, what can you do in this life? And that'll be one of the answers. Enjoy the fruit of your labor and just the work of your hand. But long term, it really doesn't do it. So then he says, okay, possessions and wealth. Now, in that day, true wealth was not just measured in money. Of course, they didn't have printed money. It was measured in gold and silver, but in flocks and herds. The more herds or livestock you have, the greater wealth. And also with slaves or people that would work for you. So he said, I had these slaves, flocks, and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Now again, if you go and look at some of the largest ranches in America that are thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, they'll run thousands of head of cattle on them. And he says, look at my livestock, larger herd than anyone before me. How big do you think it was? You know, tens of thousands. And he says, I collected myself silver and gold. We already looked at the yearly allotment. How much was a 2 ton of gold a year? I don't remember what it was. He said silver was like stone. There was so much silver, it was like stones on the ground. And that's how much wealth he had, the treasures of kings and provinces. He says, man, I've got it all. Now, is that going to make life secure and happy and fulfilling? And the answer was already what? Now, this is the hardest one, because in America, what is success tied to? Accumulation of wealth. That's why we're so excited about the stock market. And that's why when it went down and your 401, you know, was cut in half. It's so intimately tied to the accumulation of wealth, isn't it? Success. That's how we gauge success in America. And it's a lie of Satan, and it's a byproduct of the free market society, which I think is great because it empowers more people to be independent and take care of themselves. But the downside is it creates this false image that success and security is tied to money. And there's nothing farther from the truth, because there's more drugs being taken prescription in America for antidepressant than any other time in history, because people are not happy. They're miserable across the land in many, many ways. But what do they turn to find their happiness? More stuff and more things. If I'll just get more, then maybe it'll fill this hole inside. Okay? Doesn't work. Someone had their hand up. Yes.
Is this attitude he had in this time of he did this, as I studied it, can it be the impetus to destroy Jerusalem? Because his son had a choice. Continue with this attitude of I'll build and I'll collect this gold and all. And then he had the choice of relieving the people. Because this was a burden on the people.
Right. The taxes and everything.
And it brought down, I mean, it's the split. That was the beginning of the split.
Right.
In Israel.
Right.
Can we think that way? Is that?
That his son carried on the same kind of thinking and never learned lessons from his father?
Yes.
It sure seems that way. She's referring to that when Solomon died, his son had the opportunity, and he listened to the old counselor, said, reduce taxes and people will serve you, and it's tough. And his younger counselor said, what? No, show them that you're stronger than your dad. Put your thumb down. And he did that, and it ended up splitting Israel, and that caused all sorts of problems from then on. Yeah, it seems like he never learned anything, did he, from his father? And it was all about self for him. Yeah, that's not the answer. Yes.
But it lost him.
Yeah.
Ten kingdoms. I mean, ten.
The tribes, yeah. Yeah, when they split, right. This is, we could spend a lot of time giving story after story of people that have accumulated wealth but were miserable in their end of their life. People that have committed suicide. People when they get older and they're sitting at the top of their field, but then their spouse dies. And all of a sudden, all that wealth and money means nothing because they find themselves miserably alone. And they realize family trumps money any day of the week. But yet, so much of our life is just spent, and I'm talking about their energy and our physical wellness, our health, is spent pursuing wealth. And he says, it's a foolish game to try to play.
Now, there's a balance to this, and I went over to Ephesians 4:28, talks about, let him who stole still no longer, let him labor with his hands, that he might have what is good, that he might have something to give those that have need.
That's right. That's right, and we'll try to create the balance later, because you don't want to throw out. But he's just looking, is this the answer? And he's trying to destroy these false notions. Well, if I had, he said, no, I had it, and it doesn't cut it. And we have to believe that and trust him there. So then he goes on in the last part of verse 8, and it's interesting. The first thing is music, because he says, I collected for myself male and female singers. And then he just puts on the second half of that sentence, the pleasures of men, many concubines. Now, in my short life on this earth, I've just noticed one thing. People are always enamored with music. I remember in my teenage years working on side jobs, I bought my first big stereo system with speakers, you know, in a box this big, and a Sherwood amp, and a high-end turntable for its day. That's when we had vinyl records. I know some of you don't know what those are. Well, I think everyone does here. But and playing The Who, and so loud the house would shake, and my dad would come up and pound on the door, turn that thing down, right? Has there ever been a generation that people have not been enamored with music? There's something about music that lifts the soul, doesn't it? It captivates you. It can take you here. It can take you there. It can help you when you're sad. It can help you when you're glad, right? Music is amazing. People sing. Kids love to sing. There's nothing new. He didn't have to have an iPod. What did Solomon do when he wanted to hear the latest tunes or the latest song? He had a live concert anytime, anywhere he wanted it, right? He just said, hey, and they just came in and performed. Now, what kind of singers did he have, you think? The absolute best at any time, anywhere, to fit any mood. I'm tired of you. I want some jazz. No, 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 let's have some country. No, no country today. No country for the rest of the year, all right? Right. I know, okay. But I've just got to get you to the point. Could he hear and listen to it all? Yes. He says, I did that. And was he doing it at the same time he was doing the drinking? You would think so, all right? And where was he doing all this? In his beautiful, magnificent palace, right? Overlooking his beautiful parks and ponds. And the skyline, there's the temple, one of the seven wonders of the world. And now he's going to add to it what? 300 concubines. Now, that's the pleasures of men that he talks about. It's sexual gratification. Now, first of all, let's just set the table correctly. Who gave us men and women that desire? God did. And in its right place, it's a beautiful thing. It's one of the blessings of being one flesh. It's not what makes you one flesh. It's one of the blessings of being married in God's eyes. And without it, there wouldn't be procreation. There wouldn't be that natural desire for each other. So we're talking about sexual pleasures here just for the sake of sexual pleasures, not inside a proper relationship. Even though he married these ladies, 700 of them, plus 300 concubines, but let's just be frank. This is sex for sex's sake. That's what it is. That's what he's doing. And he perhaps convinced himself it's in a proper relationship, but we're not here judging the morality. We're just saying, looking at the test, okay? Because many a man said, if I could do that, then I would be happy. That's why you have such a hedonist society now. I read that Hugh Hefner, and we know who he is, the Playboy Empire, that he had so much exposure to sexual pleasures that in his later years, he had no desire at all because he's so satiated, nothing could stimulate him anymore. And what beautiful women did he not have access to? And anyone he wanted, from what you understand. But you see that same thing going on today. And if you had 1,000 ladies to pick from, there's only 365 days in a year. All right? Well, you can just do the math and you can figure out he had anybody at any time, and they're the most beautiful and fairest women there were around. With the beautiful palace, wonderful singing that could create all these moods and everything, and the alcohol, the best wine there was, and the beautiful parks and the scenery, and all these servants attending to your every need, every food, every desire, this man was at the pinnacle in the world's eyes. You with me? I'm not saying in God's eyes, but in the world's eyes. He has it all. You couldn't ask for anything more. Then I became great, increased more than all preceding me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. That's important to note, because he understands this is a test. And who knows how many years this test took in his life, decades. All that my eyes desired, I didn't refuse him. He had the ability, authority, and the money, and the resources to do it. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. That's why I say when he was on the top, you cannot reach where Solomon was. That's why we say this. And how many times, again, we tell us, if I just had that cabin on Mount Hood and I wouldn't have to go to work ever again, I'd be happy. Or I could live on the Caribbean on one side and the Pacific on the other side in Costa Rica. I'd be happy. Solomon had all that and more, didn't he? And what's his answer? Well, my heart was pleased because of my labor. We'll come back to this later. And that was the reward for my labor. There was some momentary satisfaction. But notice what he says in verse 10 and 11 now. But I considered all my activities which my hands had done. When I stood back and looked at all that I've accomplished now and all that I did, the projects, the ponds, the forests, the riches, the gold, the building, the women, the wine and the song, all the labor which I exerted, all this energy spent on the earth. See, energy and life and time is your, what am I looking for? It's your leverage. It's your capital that you spend. And I'm not talking about money capital, but your life on this earth, if it's 70 years or 80, you only have so much amount of energy, physical and emotional energy. You only have so much of your body you can use. And with that clock is ticking, that's the capital. And you have to choose, where am I going to spend this capital called my life on this earth to its best value? Where am I going to invest it to get the greatest return? That's what he's saying. I took all my energy, all my labor, and here's how I invested it in this world. And when I looked back and looked at my investment, he said what? It's all vanity. It's just worthless. It's no long-term value. There's no profit, he says, under the sun. Now, at first hand, that's really depressing. But also it's freeing. Because it gives us the opportunity to not make the same mistake and seek the things that are of profit and that are of value and not waste our time doing what he did. Does that make sense? And then, of course, to find the balance in life. Now, there's the answer. Any questions before we move to the next paragraph then? Yes.
I think in verse
Yes.
Where did he go? Where did he go? Where was his investment in these people that he ruled?
Right.
There's just so much I.
Yeah. It was dominated by self, wasn't it? And he was not in a good place. It didn't sound like it at all. And that's what, you know, a lot of people are in the world today. It's all about self. What makes you happy? It feels good, do it. You know, it's your life. Find truth for yourself. And all those things. It's all about self. Very narcissistic, isn't it?
And this is very depressive. And he's not looking at God at this point. And he's doing this. And later in verse 17, we'll get there. It says, I hated life.
Yeah. Yeah, he does use that language. We'll get there.
Hated life.
Yes.
It just 1 year. This was 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, at least of lifestyle. And
lifetime of it.
Yeah. That's,
it's crazy to think of. It is. But I would ask you, and just those that you talk to and talk to your kids, is share these stories and talk about what's important. And look at your life. Where am I spending my energy, my life's capital on? Because if we're following this path in any way, we already know ahead of time we're wasting our time. Now, what I mean by that, as though that's going to be the answer to your life. That's going to make you fulfilled and happy. Because what do they say? The journey is often more pleasurable and rewarding than the actual destination. And that's so true. And a lot of times, just planning a project. And when you're done, let's go do something else, you know? Or you're planning a trip. It often just planning is more fun, dreaming, hoping. And what Solomon is trying to get us to do is, let's dream a little bigger. Let's dream about heaven. Let's dream about life above the sun. Because that's both exciting and, you know, to plan for, but the reward when you get there is going to be the only thing that's of value. That's what we're trying to create here, as a mindset that looks up above the sun. So let's look at this next section, because the test is going to turn now to, his considering wisdom and madness and folly. Verse 12, I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly, for what will the man do who will come after the king, except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls both of them. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, yet it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. There is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as the fool. Inasmuch in the coming days, all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life. For the work which had been done in the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. So let's put this, we read it, and let's try to make sense of it. There's some people, he's contrasting foolishness and wisdom. There's the pursuit and love of wisdom, we call that philosophy. Then there's a fool that never considers anything beyond just his nose, what he can see. And he lives just for right now, never thinks about tomorrow or the consequence or anything. And at one end, you're like, man, isn't that a great life? They have no responsibility, no account, but they just do what they want. But they're fools, right? That's what he's calling a fool. Because tomorrow they have no money or whatever, and they don't even think about the consequences. But he says, when I plan ahead and I think about things and I consider the end from the beginning and I meditate, and he says, when it's all said and done, we're both in the same condition. And what is that? Dead. Now that's what he's going to talk about. So let's look at it real quick. First of all, when you compare wisdom and the folly, who wins, first of all, on the life, on the day-to-day living? He says wisdom wins every time. And if you're not going to think and consider your steps and plan and take advice and, you know, just live fool without. Are there some people like that? They never consider the consequences of their actions. And then they wake up someday, they're either in jail or they're deathly sick or they're broke or they're homeless. How'd they get there? Because they've lived the life of foolishness. Now, I'm not saying a fool in a demeaning way. It's just foolishness. You know what I'm saying?
with no forethought about what's happening to their life. So he says, wisdom excels folly every time, hands down. Get some wisdom. Live with wisdom. Plan your life. Consider the consequences of today's actions. But then he says, but when I think about it, the fate of the fool, it's the same one that befalls me. So what's he saying? I look at this guy who dies prematurely because of the poor choices he's made. He's 33 and he's dead, maybe because too much alcohol, starved to death, exposure, or ended up losing his life because of capital punishment. Who knows? But he's dead, right? You're like, man, what a wasted life. Do we see that around us? Wasted lives, wasted opportunities. One of the number one quarterback out of Washington State when we lived in Idaho was, oh, I forgot his name just now, Ryan Leaf. Number one in the draft. Never made it at all. Bombed. You know why? Drugs. Went to his head, couldn't handle it, couldn't control it. And he's come back and talked about how he's wasted his life and his opportunity. He learned his lesson and got in trouble with the law again. And he's come back and talked about that. And hopefully he's got his life on track now. But you look at that. Wow, you had the world at your doorstep and you threw it away just for some momentary pleasures. Right? And he bemoans the fact. But in the end, Solomon says, that guy's dead at 33, and I might be 73 now, but pretty soon I'm going to die. We're going to be in the same ground. Mine will be in an ornate grave, and his will be just an unmarked grave. But we're both what? Dust. Dead. So he says, when you look at it, what benefit do I have or advantage do I have over him? Absolutely zero. We're both dead. What can you do when you're dead? Nothing. And he says it gets worse. Not only you're both dead, he says, no one's going to remember who you are. There's no last remembrance of the wise man as with the fool. Inasmuch as the coming days, all's going to be forgotten. They won't remember who that is in that grave because they don't even know his name sometimes. Or do we have unmarked graves? Because people die and their bodies are found dead somewhere and we don't even know who they are. Isn't that sad? No one even knows who you are, and you lived a life on this earth, and you're buried with no remembrance even for your name. What a wasted, pitiful life. It's so sad. But Solomon says, I'll be there too. It's the same fate. Now, are there exceptions? Some people you remember who they are. Well, we're talking about one. Who? Solomon. There are rare, rare exceptions, but overall, of the multiple billions of people, and there's like 7 billion people on the earth right now, all of them are going to die within the next generation, you know, most all of them, and how many's names will be remembered? Maybe a president here, or a mass murderer, or Well, I'm saying a king of a country or...
Right, but the other people in the world won't know who that president. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Only in a locality or a geographical place or a culture, maybe a person's remembered.
That's right.
Somebody over on the other side of the world's going to...
And we don't remember people in our own country because who was the president before Johnson? There was a president before him? Yeah. That's a good question. Now you say, well, that's the great equalizer. That's why we call death the great equalizer. That if you're living for some type of notoriety, you're fooling yourself because when you're dead, no one's going to remember you. And what's worse is who's going to get what you have left over? Now he's going to talk about that. So now let's look at the last section. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because it's kind of self-explanatory. So let's just read it. Verse 18. Thus I hated the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who come after me. He said, this is the biggest injustice in life. I created the greatest city, the greatest parks, the greatest ponds, the greatest palace, and when I'm dead, who's going to get it? Someone else. And how much labor do they do? Zero. How much wisdom do they have? Who knows? Usually they're not very wise at all.
And we see that repeated over and over. The wealth generated by one family, the next generation blows it. Often that happens. Who knows, verse 19, whether he be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over the fruit of all my labor, which I've labored by acting wisely under the sun. He said, this too is vanity. This is crazy. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. Someone just said, him and his wife decided, you know, should we go on a tour or we should save our money for our kids' inheritance? You know what the answer was? Spend it. Because you earned it and they're just going to spend it themselves on themselves. Isn't that not true? And we, okay, that's what he's saying here. I despaired. All this, I mean, could he spend all his money? Probably not. But someone else is going to have control over it all, and they work for none of it. Verse 21, when there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This is too his vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? This is what he gets, a bed with the worms. That's what he gets. He gets to sleep with the worms in the dust of the earth. That's all he gets. And then another man gets to live in his plush palace. Because all his days, his task is painful and grievous. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Verse 24, he's going to give us some conclusions, but I want to stop there. Because we're trying to just set the stage. Solomon says, I tested. Now, he's not done. But the answer is in. And it still rings loudly to this day. Don't look to this earth for satisfaction. Look above. And then you're going to find the power to enjoy this earth for the short time you're here. All right, come back next week and we'll talk about it some more.